this thrilling day, John Glenn recorded the emotions and impressions of being the United States' first tourist in space. He had little sensation of speed. It was, he said, about the same as flying in an airliner at, say, 30,000 feet and looking down at clouds at 10,000. Over California, he spotted part of the Imperial Valley to his left and the Salton Sea. But astronaut Glenn's adventure involved far more than mere sightseeing. He encountered difficulties that turned his journey into a nightmare of suspense. Over Mexico on his first orbit, the capsule's attitude control system began to act up. A small jet designed to release hydrogen peroxide steam to keep the capsule in a stable position was not working properly. The capsule, reported Glenn, drifts off in a yaw to the right at about 1 degree per second.
Our tracking station located at Mouche, Australia, reported contact.
Mike Worf is known to countless Michigan and Midwestern radio listeners as the longtime Detroit radio host of Kaleidoscope. The daily program, which aired from the mid-1960s to the late 90s, won the coveted Peabody Award in 1968, as well as numerous other statewide and national honors. Starting in May, Mike Worf's Kaleidoscope makes its return to Michigan audiences and listeners worldwide on WKAR AM 870 and WKAR.org. WKAR is partnering with Michigan State University's Vincent Voice Library in presenting MSU's 1,000-plus collection of Kaleidoscope programs donated by Worf to MSU in the 70s. Beginning Saturday the 17th at 4 on AM 870, Mike Worf's Kaleidoscope brings listeners an hour-long journey into the people, places, and events that shaped our world today. In the first part of a two-part conversation with Sun and WKAR radio station manager Peter Worf, Mike Worf recalled the origins of Kaleidoscope. Tempo was the name of Worf's show at WTAG Worcester, Massachusetts, combining his now familiar signature sound of narrative, interview, archival recordings, and music.
Tempo was a fairly successful program. I remember it became an interview show, and one day I was told that there was a fellow that was going to be interviewed. That his name was Malcolm X, and of course he was the great, back in the late 50s, he spoke very, you know, he was considered a rebel and a real antagonistic type of a person.
And leader of, one of the leaders of the Nation of Islam.
Right. Yes, of course he was. And then, but that had not started. And he said, "You can call me Red."
Oh.
That was his nickname.
Right.
Because he had red hair.
Right.
And
he talks about that right at the beginning of his autobiography, written with Alex Haley, the autobiography of Malcolm X. He speaks of his nickname, Red, and why people called him that.
Yeah, quite interesting. He was very warm and friendly.
Uh-huh. You weren't aware at that time of who he was.
Of who Malcolm X was.
Yeah.
And he wanted to give a talk on the problem in the country, and I had no idea that it was as deep and as grave as he made it to be. And so we sat down and we started this air interview, and immediately his personality changed like that.
Uh-huh.
And he became very aggressive
and
very almost brutal
in
his way of handling
it. He got right into civil rights issues.
Absolutely. There was no, and I did not know that much about civil rights.
Right.
I mean, I was a kid.
I believe that the white man has done a great injustice to the black man in this country by having kidnapped our people and brought us here and down to the level that we're on today. And today, instead of approaching the factors that their original mistake has created, instead of approaching these factors objectively and realistically, the greatest sin that they're doing now is trying to pretend that they never committed a crime, that they never did any wrong. And when the Honorable Elijah Muhammad points out the injustices that our people are suffering, they make that sin worse by accusing him of teaching hate, or by accusing him of black supremacy, or by accusing him of advocating violence, simply because he is pointing out the real factors in crime.
And he just chewed me up
right.
and flayed me.
Did he?
As far as knowledge was
right.
concerned, because I didn't know what I was talking about.
And you were a young member of the establishment media.
Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely. And a real greenhorn when it came to this sort of thing, and how you handle people like that.
Yeah.
I didn't know how to back off.
Right.
I didn't, so I plunged right in, and he just chewed me up, terribly.
So what did you do? What did you think? How did you react?
I think I probably I was hurt too. No. Emotionally, right. I mean, the guy, and then at the end, when he left, he turned around, shook my hand, and said, "Thank you very much." And he was right. He was that former wonderful, easygoing guy, right. So he had, you could say, he had a couple of personalities going for, and he knew how to handle people, right. And that was his forte as far as his being able to. Spread his message and bring his message to the public.
That's interesting. He was maybe using the medium, but not necessarily reflecting on that personal relationship
right.
he was having.
Exactly right. Yeah. He was. So every once in a while, something like that would come up that they threw into my lap, and I just went into the program director and I said, "Don't do that to me again, please. You know, I want to know what I'm getting into. It's unfair." But along about 6-7 years after I had been at WTAG, Telegram and Gazette, which is what the call letter stood for, I started making auditions for other stations in the country, one of which was WJR here in Detroit. And I kept on sending auditions to Charlie Park, who was the chief announcer at that time. People will remember him. You may have been, but when you came out, you know, as family, you weren't cognizant of any of that.
That's one name I don't remember. Yeah,
Charlie Park was the chief announcer and a wonderful, wonderful, sort of a soft southern voice. Good afternoon, everyone. He was very mellifluous, but he was also the head of the announcing department. And he said, "Don't hire this kid. Don't hire this Wharf kid, because in 3 months he'll want a program of his own. I can tell the way he delivers himself and what he talks about in his auditions that this guy's going to be trouble." But they did hire me. And he was right. About 6 months afterwards, I got a show called Kaleidoscope. And in those days, Kaleidoscope was not anything like it became. It was a show about 15 minutes of music from Israel, 15 minutes of music from Spain, 15 minutes of music from Ireland, and another quarter hour from South Africa or wherever it was. Right. And you put them all together. This was the Kaleidoscope, the Kaleidoscope of the world in music and that sort of thing.
So the Kaleidoscope name was something you came into. It wasn't a name of your invention.
It was a deadly program, absolutely deadly. It was dull to do. And, it was on at 10 o'clock at night, and, you didn't know how many people were listening. Phone never rang. No one ever called. You were out there alone. Is anyone there? That sort of thing. And so as time went along, I decided one day that there's got to be a better way to do this show.
A pleasant good day, everyone. This is your host, Mike Ward, with Kaleidoscope. They said we had the flexibility of an eel, the lies of a cat, and the bizarre genius that enabled him to sneer at setters. He shed police handcuffs merely by tapping them in the right place. He could release himself from dungeons in less time than it took to lock him up. And for 25 years, he astounded audiences by his escape. He was buried in sealed...
And so I came up with an idea that I would take some of the elements that I used to use for tempo and put that together in what Kaleidoscope was on WJR. And Kaleidoscope could be any topic, but make it a topic that would be of interest to people, like the story of movie music or the story of music from vaudeville and show business and theater and pop songs. So anyway, I decided that, I think what I'll do is I'll just try. I had been doing this show, Kaleidoscope, for about 2 years. Mm-hmm. And I said, I've got to try something else. I said, I'm just going to go ahead and do it. And,
it was 10 o'clock at night.
The devil take the hindmost.
Right.
There's nobody else there anyway.
Right.
And that's exactly what I wanted some advice from a good friend. And one of the fellows that I worked with at the time, before he became the announcer for the Detroit Tigers, was Paul Carey. And Paul and I sat down, we had a cup of coffee and talked about it. And I said, I've got this idea for the show. He said, "What is it?" I told him. He said, "Well, go ahead and do it. Nobody's listening anyway." So, it was my neck out there, but he go ahead and do it.
Go for it.
Yeah. So I decided that I would do it. And I did a show on American vaudeville back in the age, from the 19, the Nora Bays and Fanny Bryce and George M. Cohan. And
that was one of the first shows.
Yeah, that was the first show.
Oh.
And I remember very, very clearly and how I put it together. And it was a good show, and I really put my best foot forward, too. So the next day, I came into the work, and there's Charlie Park standing at the elevator saying, "The boss wants to see you." And he had the, you know, sour look on his face. I said, "Oh, boy, I'm in for it now." And the program manager's name was Reginald Meridew. What a great name, huh?
Reginald Meridew speaking.
Anyway, I decided that I'd face up to it, and I went in to talk to him. He says, "Well," he said, "Mike," he says, "I don't know what you did last night, but apparently it was pretty good, so keep on doing it." He didn't want to know what I did. He didn't care,
heard it was good.
Yeah, he heard it was good.
Typical radio manager.
Yeah. So go ahead and do it. And that's how it took off, And I was able to do, it was on at night for about 3 or 4 years. Then they put it in the daytime. Dan Burke, who became a general manager of the station, decided that he'd like to try it off in the daytime. And we did, and it was successful.
Now he was alone, flat on his back on a form-fit couch inside the instrument-packed capsule Friendship 7. In an incredibly matter-of-fact voice, Lieutenant Colonel John Herschel Glenn Jr. began to count. 10, 9, 8, 7, 6. A great yellow-white gush of flame spewed out from the Atlas D missile. For nearly 4 seconds, it seemed rooted to its pad. Then, almost deliberately, it headed into the brilliant blue sky. Said John Glenn, "We're underway."
Once again, Mike Worf's Kaleidoscope returns to WKAR AM 870 Saturday, May 17th at 4 p.m.